earlier this week on the pod, but that just means an extra day to get this into your feed and get it listened, because what a week it is. Ireland against New Zealand in Chicago, the first of four games for Andy Farrell's side across November. We'll be talking about that game on Saturday and the round five URC matches last weekend. Bernard Jackman is with me in studio as well. Bernard, how are you?
Good, thanks. Off to Chicago tomorrow, can't wait.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up a little bit later on. You have to throw it in straight away. Joining us on the line again, though, is Gareth Steenson. Good to have you back, Gareth. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much for having me. Looking forward to getting a bit of chat, especially about the upcoming games. So all good.
Yeah, plenty to get through. So we'll fire straight into it. Before we get into Ireland against New Zealand, do you want to touch back on round five of the URC? Because we've kind of got to the end of this opening block of games, Bernard, for the November break. Five matches through, four for some of the teams who had the postponements, obviously. But it's a nice opportunity to just kind of check back in, see where everyone is after the opening block of games. Because in fairness, we're not far off a third of the way through the season, an 18-game regular season. So Ulster had their first defeat of the campaign. They were beaten 49-31 by the Lions in Johannesburg at the weekend, bought a try-scoring bonus for Richie Murphy's side, so they picked up 6 points from that South African tour. Leinster had their second win of the season. They avoided a bit of a banana skin, 50-26 winners against Zebra at the Aviva. Zebra quite good in the first half, though, and kept Leinster working. And then at Thomond Park, a proper old-school arm wrestle between Munster and Connacht. Munster won 17-15 at Thomond Park for their fifth win in a row. And I think we'll start at Thomond Park, because five wins out of five to start the season. Munster are joint top of the table. They have a lot of scope to get better. I think that's the important part as well. It's been a good start with results, but they don't look anywhere near like peaking at the moment. That's about as good a start as Clayton McMillan could have possibly hoped for.
Oh, it's a dream start, really, in terms of wins, in terms of, I think, the confidence in the players that they can close out games which are tight, obviously. Cardiff, Edinburgh and Connacht were all tight games. And actually, in fact, I think probably the last 10 minutes of those games were probably their most impressive in those tight games, when, you know, and that's when games are there to be won or lost.
They actually had to go out and win those.
Totally. Yeah. And or protect the league. Like, I remember Crowley obviously took that drop goal, which made it a two-score game against Cardiff, against Edinburgh. They had young halfbacks on and they came from behind to find a way to win. And against Connacht, really the last 20 minutes, they pretty much lived in the Connacht half. And with Connacht's lack of a kicking game, it was always unlikely Connacht were going to be able to work their way down the field, you know, with decent territory moves to get into a scoring position. So I think they'll be absolutely delighted. He's obviously rotated a lot of players. I've seen him live five times. I've been at the five games they played live. And they look so fit, but there's a bit of muscle on some of the players who wasn't last year, and you can see the shapes and what they're trying to do. Just unfortunately, it's not all coming to hand as well as they would like. But wow, play Argentina this weekend is another hit out for them, and then obviously a little bit of a rest and come back and then build towards the next block and obviously Europe as well. So in terms of getting instant belief in a new voice, they've certainly had that.
And Gareth, like the obvious thing to point out, if you're trying to nitpick anything from Munster in these opening games, is that they certain performance wise, they've had two really, really good performances against Scarlets opening day and against Leinster. And the other three have been patchy and scrappy, and they've had to kind of dig out their wins and dig out their points. I think in previous seasons you might look at it and say, oh, they're a good bit below their best. But when you consider how one of the things Clayton McMillan said when he came into the job was that he wanted the floor to be a lot higher than it was in previous seasons. That they've gone through seasons where, at their very, very best, they can pull out the 9 and 10 out of 10 performances when it really, really matters. But they can often go out the following week and put in your 4 or 5 out of 10 performances. And I think we're seeing a lot more 6.5, 7 out of 10 performances from Munster than we probably actually have seen in previous years. And while there is a huge amount of scope to get better over the course of the year, that'll fill them nicely with confidence that the floor seems to be a lot higher than it was in previous years.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like anything, winning becomes a habit. It's almost like, when you know, if if you get into a bit of a funk and you're not winning games, it's the same thing. You get into tight games and you struggle to get across the line. I think what over the course of the first 5 weeks, you know, that what Munster will be, you know, obviously there's loads of things to work on. You'll be working on things throughout the year. It's a long season. Another good opportunity when they get the opportunity with Argentina, they can go out and actually perform and do other things. But I think at the minute, the way they'll be delighted with how it's going. They've played in two big games the last 2 weeks. You know, obviously the result they had in Dublin was phenomenal. They have to pull out what you would class a 9 out of 10 performance there. And then they back it up. It's massively important that you can back up the emotional performance that they would have had to put in the week before against a good Connacht side who are going quite well. And they had to dog it out. So they're showing that they can win games in different ways. So there'll be real positives in amongst that group right now. To be sitting where they are, 5 from 5, is exactly where you'd want to be. And you're definitely not feeling like you're playing maybe to the ultimate potential that they've got. So it's massive amount of positives they've got in there. Obviously, they were missing players as well who were traveling away with the national side. So they're getting players all across. They're getting loads of guys getting minutes in them. So they're really using their squad, which is fantastic going forward in the competition. And from a start point, I'm sure they're absolutely delighted where they are right now.
I'm not down in Limerick on Saturday for the game against the Argentina selection. You know, it's probably not a first choice Pumas team, but it's funny, like I remember last year being down there for the game against the All Blacks 15, and 3 years ago being down in Cork for the game against the Springboks selection. And when you consider the starts to the season they had leading up to both of those, they were deep into their injury crises. And I remember on each of those two occasions going out to the match going like, geez, this just feels like the last thing they actually need to have another match in this block. And like there were great occasions in the end. And obviously they won against the South African team and it was a brilliant night. And last year, even though they didn't win, it felt like there was a little bit of something in the air that evening. This is actually a nice opportunity now for players to go out and not kind of be, geez, this is our one and only opportunity to make an impression. This is where the season starts now. This is just a nice opportunity. They kind of have their points on the board in the league. They don't have a massive injury crisis, and Clayton McMillan can go out and try out a few players in a few different positions and not really have to be worrying about building something for the end of November.
No, 100%. It's given the fact that they have a couple of weeks off after, it's actually a nice extra game to get.
Yeah.
And also I think it's a nice extra game to get because of Munster's history with touring sides. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly, they tapped into that every time. And that Springbok performance was a performance that didn't mirror in any way what they'd been doing in the previous rounds of the URC. So they've always been able to get up for these kind of extraordinary games or extra games. But I actually think what you're seeing with Munster now is, and it's something McMillan has identified as being a key target, is consistency. But I actually think they've actually been quite consistent in terms of the emotional impact or the emotional level they've brought to games. And like against Connacht, it wasn't anything to do with physicality or energy or aggression. It was there. It's just the layers of accuracy that let them down. And obviously against Munster or against Leinster, when you put in Tyke Byrne, Jack Crowley, Tom Farrell, those players with, I suppose, big game temperament and another layer of class, they were able to execute and make sure everything else that was around was a bit more accurate. But I think what McMillan's doing is every week has got a different team, so they're not being like they were before, where you know, the focus just comes on for certain games, mm-hmm. and you go to an emotional level. I think what he's trying to do is get that to be pretty level, and obviously then when you play a team like Leinster away, you find another little bit, or when mm-hmm. you maybe play a knockout game in Europe against a worthy rival, you find a little bit more. But I think they're looking at basically every week trying to get that emotional level pretty consistent, and then being able to continue to fine-tune their game. And I think looking back on Saturday, like why did Munster struggle, or why did Connacht struggle as well? Because it was a compelling game in terms of its competitiveness, but the quality actually was yeah. quite low. No one really got to implement the way they want to play to a clear effect. But the kicking game from both teams was horrific. Not just place kicking, but just yeah. kicking out of hand when they should have kicked contestables, they kicked long. When they were trying to kick contestables, they kicked too short. And I think that will really frustrate them. And that stopped both teams kind of getting that platform that they wanted. It was a very good defensive performance by Connacht, particularly the discipline. But yet they'll be frustrated that they didn't get to do what they want to do with the ball. And some of that was down. And that's the problem for Connacht a little bit at the moment, is is with Josh Ioane, you have an amazing running 10.
We saw that with the opening try.
Yeah.
You like know. Just completely sucked in a player and Byron Ross comes in under the post.
He can probably do things. He can do things. He's probably better in the ball in hand with any other 10 in Irish rugby running, okay, and a running threat. But unfortunately, his efficiency is similar to where it was last year, where he's not, like, he missed touch for that Jack O'Donoghue try. And they do tend to overplay with him at 10, I think, and puts a lot of pressure back on the 9. And Ben Murphy's got a good kicking game, but that's the challenge. And obviously, goal kicking for Connacht, you know, missing conversions, one pretty easy, end up costing them at least a draw. So that's the area to work on for sure, Lancaster. But yeah, I think you're going to see a much more consistent Munster. And I actually think you're going to see a much more consistent Connacht as well once they learn more about how to game manage. And Lancaster is very strong on that.
Yeah, let's keep it on Connacht actually then. And I'll mention that, like, I know you said the kicking in general wasn't good, but on the goal kicking, I do want to bring in Gareth on this, obviously, because that was your area of expertise, Gareth. When you look at Connacht, like, they can't, Sam Gilbert can't arrive any sooner, because we've been told he's, like, he plays fullback, whatever, but he's a goal kicker. It wasn't just at Thomond Park the other night where the goal kicking has kind of stung them a little bit this season. You can look at other games in this campaign where I think the Benetton game was probably a little bit closer than it should have been, but then you also have the games against Cardiff and the game against the Bulls last week where they left too many points out there, too many opportunities that could have turned a win into a defeat or a defeat into a bonus point defeat or something along those lines. It is an issue with someone like Josh Ioane. You look at those kicks on Saturday, Gareth, and one of them in particular was a relative tap over, and none of the three were hugely difficult.
Yeah, no, look, that's obviously frustrating for Connacht, especially when you've got a 10 there who can pull the strings and, you know, like, they're scoring great tries. He's you know, with the ability that he has with his attacking game, it is disappointing that, again, that they don't have that backup a little bit to take the points when they're on offer. And in the conditions, obviously, what they'll normally face when they're playing at the sports ground, or, you know, the win factor that comes into it, and being able to win and score points, you know, keep the scoreboard ticking is really important at times as well. And, you know, if you're relying on your team to score 2, 3, 4 tries a game, you know, especially, that's going to be difficult when the weather conditions change, especially when we go into the winter months. So, yeah, they'll definitely be looking to shore that up. You know, you want to be able to take points, especially when a close game, near the end of games, if you're needing 3 points or 2 points, you know, to get conversions as well, it's really important that you're turning 5 points into 7, because they all add up over the course of the game. And if you're definitely in that type of position where you haven't got the confidence in your goal kicker, it's not ideal. But again, the way Connacht are playing, you know, they're scoring out, they're scoring tries. You know, there's a lot of positivity around what they're doing. But if they can shore that part of their game up, you know, you start adding on. If they're scoring 4 tries a game and they're getting an extra 8 points on top, you know, there's another score on top, you know. So hopefully, you know, over the course of the weeks that are coming, that they can get that shored up.
Medium-term solution for Connacht is to sign Joey Carby for next year. Honestly, I think Lancaster is going to have to be given support from the RFU and the Connacht branch to be able to bring players in that suit the way he wants to play. And
Carby's left the door open. Left the door. Not specifically Connacht, no, but he's left the door open for a return to Ireland.
No, there's two parts to this. I think one, it gives Connacht, you know, a top end playmaker who's very experienced, who has quality, who can play obviously 10 or 15 or even centre if an emergency, but he's a good goal kicker, and he would then become eligible for Ireland, mm-hmm, for the World Cup in Australia. And I'm not saying that that's anything against the 10s we have currently, but
it's always nice to have another 100% option.
And you know, I don't necessarily agree with the rule of basically cutting out players who go away like that. I'd be in favour of actually letting players play from England. I think it's good for the group, particularly because the group has been so settled under Andy Farrell. Having that different point of view coming into camp, I think, could be good. But regardless of that, I think for Connacht, the RFU could make a really good move by bringing him back, giving Connacht a hand, but also strengthening our depth chart at 10 for Ireland for the World Cup.
Thing too as well with Connacht is, you know, they've got Jack Cardy there as well. So Jack Cardy's got a lot of experience and he's done a lot of, you know, he's a reliable goal kicker. And obviously Sean McNaughton coming through as well. You know, they've got a few in there who have the ability to go and knock the points over. So it depends on what way they want to play the game going forward, I suppose. If you want to go in and if you can identify that it's going to be a windy weekend, or, you know, they're coming up against a side who's going to maybe be a little bit more assured in defence, they can definitely mix and match what they're doing at 10, just to play around that.
Yeah, I've a lot of faith in Carty. I think Carty still has a role to play, but I'm just thinking long-term succession for him. And obviously, we know with foreign players, it's not always as easy to keep them after their contract runs out, etc. Yeah. So I think if you're getting in, Nocton and the fullback who played on Saturday night from Kings,
Carry West.
He was a 10. They now seem to be seen as outside back. So it might be just short to medium term. Someone like Carby, I think, could be a nice player to have in their squad.
Do you see Stuart Lancaster potentially trying to tempt someone like Kieran Frawley?
Yeah, I'd be shocked if Lancaster doesn't go after a number of Leinster players, because obviously of his relationship with them. Frawley is another obvious candidate. Like, his career is stalling. Rumour has it he's had opportunities to leave in the past and he decided to stay. But he just doesn't seem to be getting any consistent game time at 10. And that's definitely affected him. He's a talented player. He's a talented player for sure. And you could go for Frawley and Joey Carby if the checkbook is out. If he's given two checks, I'd play them on both of them.
Absolutely. You could easily fit them into the same team. Put Kieran Frawley at number 12. Last point on Connacht, I suppose. If we're trying to grade them over the course of these three games, three defeats out of four, they'll be frustrated they haven't got to play five matches, because you'd like to think that could be two wins and three defeats, which would just look a little bit different on the table. Do you think they're a better team at the moment than they were last season?
Without a doubt. I thought they were exceptionally good first game up against Benetton, because it was their first game and they played with much more maturity. Second week, obviously postponed. Third week, really disappointing.
That was really disappointing.
Yeah, that's the one that probably frustrated me the most with them. And then against the Bulls, they were quite erratic and stuff, but they showed good character at the end. But they were completely taken apart to the scrum. So that definitely had an impact on that game. And then against...
Everyone has against the Bulls so far, though.
It's been phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's been phenomenal. But and I think eventually they'll be mature enough and to be able to find a way, regardless of that. But I thought in Thomond the other night, they were right there at a decent level. And also way more harder to break down defensively, you know. Like, one of the tries was the intercept, so that's not a defensive system error, really. Yeah. And everything else, they looked reasonably comfortable against a Munster attack that wasn't firing on all cylinders, but is quite developed, obviously, because Prendergast's tenure there being quite third season. So, I think Connacht look like they're a better side for sure. And there's youngsters, like Sam Elo, young Devine, obviously didn't get as much game time at scrum half the other night, but he's a key player. And, the likes of Nocton, Kyle Ford, Hugh Gavin, etc. They're only going to get better.
Okay, so no panic at all
whatsoever? No, none.
Okay. We'll finish off the URC roundup on Ulster. And Gareth, to be honest, I wasn't hugely shocked that they were beaten by the Lions. You got the feeling they were kind of playing with house money a little bit after the big win against the Sharks. They'd obviously lost a handful of Ireland internationals who joined up with the squad in Chicago. A solid first half, but ultimately ran out of steam. I think the early afternoon games in South Africa can really be like that, when the sun is kind of like at its highest and you're at altitude as well. But overall, three wins out of four for Richie Murphy's side. They're, I think, fifth in the table. They've got a game in hand over everyone. What's the sense you're getting? What's the word on the street up there? Is there a renewed bit of excitement around them this season?
There is, yeah. There's a lot of positivity around, especially Mark Sexton coming in and the style of rugby they're looking to play. A little bit like, you know, they obviously had a good result in that game against the Dragons at the start. Obviously disappointing not to, again, similar to Connacht, that they didn't get that opportunity to play and missing out in a game. But to go to South Africa, they're going to be delighted when they actually walk back from it and they look at it and they've come away with, you know, 6 points from 10, I think it was. So to go away, get bonus points, score tries, they'll be disappointed, obviously, with the points that they shipped at the weekend. But again, I think from a fatigue factor, when you actually, all those things you take into account, they're away for 2 weeks. And the altitude, and you put it all together, they would have probably taken that before they went. So there's a lot of positivities around the style of rugby they're looking to play. And you can see them growing as they get there. You know, it's great to see a few more lads getting back into the national setup as well. So lots of positivity around what Ulster are doing at the minute. You know, for considering where they were this time last year as well, with the young group that they've got in, and you know, like there's a new coaching staff too, so they've probably had a proper opportunity around pre-season to embed what they want to do. And yeah, like again, Rob Balakoon scoring 3 tries at the weekend there. Again, real positive from his point of view. There's a fella who had struggled with injury for a little bit, so great to see him back out on the field and popping up and scoring tries. And they're scoring tries in different ways, which is great. You know, they're scoring through the forwards, they're scoring through the backs. So, look, there's a lot of positivity around Ulster rugby at the minute. And yeah, looking forward, no doubt, to whenever they get themselves back into the competition.
I would agree with Sino. There's a lot of positivity about Ulster at the moment, but there's a lot of negativity towards them in the Sharks management team. I don't know if you heard. So they obviously Ulster beat the Sharks away.
I think I missed this.
And this week, post the Ulster defeat, the owners of the Sharks asked every member of the backroom staff to actually write down in a document what they actually do, what they do on a day to day basis.
Meant negativity towards
No. Just they all had to basically justify their existence, and obviously they're trying to find out who's responsible for what because what's happened on the field. Obviously they beat the Scarlets the weekend, so that's a bit of a boost. But my understanding is the Plumtree is going to survive, but there may be some changes around that. But it's like for me, it's mad stuff that like everyone's asked what they're actually doing.
God, you know? That's unbelievable. Yeah. It's supposed to maybe Office Space. what is it you actually do here? I think an important thing to look at, like 3 wins out of 4 for Ulster, brilliant as well. When you look into it even as well, it's like their South Africa tour is out of the way already.
Yeah.
They've played 3 of the 4 South African teams they're going to play already this season. Obviously the 2 away and the Bulls at home as well. They've got to this nice, solid position in the league table as well with, on paper, what was actually a tricky enough start.
And also, they'll play Edinburgh during the international window.
Mm-hmm.
So the game that was postponed, they'll go and play Edinburgh during the international window. And Edinburgh have a lot more internationals than Ulster do at the moment. So even though that was a game I don't think Ulster would have feared, it now becomes more likely that they win that. Mm-hmm. So they're in an unbelievably good place.
Stina mentioned Rob Balakoon as well. And his... You see the flashes with him so often, and obviously we saw the flashes this weekend as well, and it's just a reminder of how quality he is, and has just been troubled so badly with the injuries over the last couple of seasons. He is a player that if you feel like if you can get him a good run of games, like he can do this sort of thing every couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see where he fits in the Irish pitcher over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
He actually doesn't fit the mold of what Andy Farrell has wanted in a winger. So we haven't been about out-and-out pace, out-and-out finishing ability. It's been, I think, what Farrell calls an untidy type of winger, obviously, who just works off the wing, pops up, running around a ruck, you know, can offload, can step, etc. But actually, that goes against the grain of nearly every other international team. They all seem to want to have at least one absolute speedster in their backfield, in their back three. So again, like what has Farrell kind of, from his little break away from Ireland, from working with different players, with the Lions, from seeing an Australia side who really kind of gave that Irish game plan a lot of problems, even with superior athletes than we have with Ireland. Like he was able to add extra layers with obviously the British and Irish Lions selection, and yet probably looking to win a test series. So is there going to be an evolution there, or are Ireland still going to have the same style of play? If they do, I don't think Balakloon is going to be a massive feature in that. Mm-hmm. But if we do change it up a little bit and look to have someone with just unbelievable power and pace and athleticism, he then maybe come into the picture.
Yeah, and I think it reminds me actually of how we would have spoken about Jacob Stockdale maybe 18 months ago.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing those subtle little changes to his game where he's popping up all over the place. We'll talk about Ireland in a minute or so. I just want to finish off on Leinster for the URC roundup though first. And see, you know, 50-26 winners against Zebra in the end. Zebra gave it a good old rattle and kind of stuck with Leinster for a solid chunk of that game. And in the end, they pulled away. When you consider they had 5 debutants in the team, multiple players whose only experience so far has been AIL rugby, like a solid day all round for Leinster. I know it doesn't erase any of the stuff that happened the week previous in Croke Park, but just to get to the end of that block, put up a solid score, and now they can start to rebuild and refresh ahead of November. It was a solid outing for Leinster in the end.
Yeah, it is. I suppose there would have been a lot of disappointment after what happened the week before. But the good thing was, you've talked about a lot of the five debutants coming in there. So they were going to get their first opportunity. So they'd have been chomping at the bit. And for them to go out, represent, put the jersey on, obviously step up and play at the level of the rat. To score 8 tries is really positive. They'll be disappointed, obviously, to concede the 4. I think whenever they break it all down, but where they've had, what if you look at over the block of what they've done, and they've had a difficult enough period. They've obviously had a lot of players away and coming back. Hence, players actually integrated themselves. Like, from a point of view where Leinster at, like, they'll be disappointed, obviously, maybe not to be. You know, I think they're down in the 7th at the minute with 11 points to the board. They'll be disappointed where they are in the league table, but they've blooded some young players. They've had an opportunity to see guys now in the URC and step up. So, like, they're in a spot where they're probably not overly used to it, but there's guys come back from Lions and stuff. They're off now with the internationals. It'll be interesting to see how they come back after the November period. But yeah, like, loads of positive. The fact you put 50 points on the board, you score 8 tries, there's lots of positives to be taken out of any game.
Yeah, and just like, on a whole, hasn't been a good start of the season for Leinster by any stretch of the imagination. And obviously, I think we expect that to improve over the course of the year, and they'll still be very much in the mix when we get to the business end of the season. If I was to pick out one, like, clear positive in these opening 5 matches, the return of Harry Byrne looks rejuvenated from his loan spell at Bristol. And I'd like to think that there should be a handful of players around the country trying to ring Harry Byrne up over the next few days, just to get a sense of, like, what did you think of that loan move away? Do you think it'd be good for me to get out of Ireland for 6 months and find something new and get out of the bubble? He looks like a player, not just who's kind of found his form again, but found his form because he's had a restart and he's had a refresh somewhere else.
Yeah, it's amazing just how circumstances played into that. And Pat Lam lost a couple of tens in a very short period, and he was looking for someone. And normally, like, someone like Harry Byrne wouldn't be open to moving. But just the way things had worked out with Sam and obviously Ross being ahead of him, Frawley getting some game time, he was totally in the fridge in Leinster. But yet he had a body of work from when he was 21 to 23, 24, where everyone knew he was a talented player at the highest level. And Andy Farrell had put him in squads, maybe above and beyond the amount of game time he'd had for Leinster. But like most players, he obviously had a little bit of a dip or a little bit of period of doubt around him. But all you can do there is prove that you have the minerals. And by taking that chance to go to Bristol, by getting out of that environment for a little while, he's now come back and he's always had lots of talent and skill, but he just looks, it's the composure. And also, like, he was the senior player effectively in that back line. Well, Luke McGrath was, but there was a lot of pressure on him to bring those youngsters into the game, to manage the game. And some of the touches he had showed the skill set he has. And it's going to be fascinating because, who knows after November? I think the challenge now for Leo is, Leo Cullen is and Leinster is, there's a pressure on to win now.
Yeah.
It's not about development anymore, right? So post-November, we'll see what happens.
And it might be the worst thing in the world for Leinster that there's a bit of pressure on them to win now in November and December. I know they're not going to be playing a match till the end of November.
Yeah.
But in this part of the season, when they haven't had that pressure before.
No, they haven't. Sorry, yeah. I didn't mean to have to win in December, but they have to probably be in position to be winning trophies at the end of the year. And then he's going to look and say, well, what 10's ready now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think there could be a battle for 10 in Leinster.
Let alone Ireland.
Not Ireland, yeah. Ireland's a given, but it could be a battle first also in Leinster for 10. And Harry, all he can do is take the game time he has and do what he's done the last in his 2 appearances. And I thought he's shown that he has certainly plenty to offer.
Yeah, keeps playing the way he is. There's a good opportunity for him to be back in the mix in a Six Nations squad in the new year.
Yeah, I think just to add on to the point there, Birch is making there around Harry going away. I think, like, I'm a great advocate for it. If I'm being honest,
You're the number
going
one
away
advocate
and
for it.
learning. Yeah, if you go and learn the game in a different way, like to be opportunity to go and play for 6 months, and for him to go and learn the way Bristol played, they're obviously very different to what Leinster do, and they like to play with this sort of freedom. So Harry will have went away, he'll have learnt this. It's a little bit now whenever you see with Ross going over there, he's playing with Gloucester again. They'll play with a little bit of freedom as well. So they're going to be exposed to different ways of playing the game, and that's only going to be brilliant. The fact now that he's come back, he'll have got that experience. Now, obviously, if you look at the Leinster, the 10 situation in Leinster and in Ireland with Sam as well, if you put him in the mix, he's only known one thing. So for him now, Harry puts himself in a position now where he has maybe different thought processes. He knows now whenever it comes to European games, what way does the potential of the English teams, what they look like and how they want to play the game. So he's broadened his horizons a little bit. So I think from his development point of view, it's great. Will it put him masses of pressure on when he comes back in? You'd like to think so, because now it'd be nice to see how Sam reacts to that when he comes back, because it'll only going to develop him. And it's great to have the competition. We're starting to see a lot more tens, and you throw Joey Carberry in the mix there as well. It'd be great to get him back, obviously, into Irish rugby. So, from a tens point of view, there's loads of tens out there, and it's about coming in and putting pressure on the guys who've got the jersey at the minute.
Just on the players away, so I was with Jordan Murphy on Friday, and like Jordan's career path, so obviously he wasn't picked up in Leinster. He was an ace as a stepping stone to Leicester, and it was his coach, Kevin West, wrote a letter to all the Premiership clubs, and Leicester gave himself and a fellow called James Ferris a trial, and he obviously had an unbelievable career in Leicester, but he was coming back to play for Ireland, and he was bringing back some of that IP from obviously an unbelievable Leicester team. But you're not even getting just Leicester, you're then getting the transfer from England because Leicester had so many English players, and that helped obviously with Ireland. He was part of that team in 2009 who won a Grand Slam for the first time in a long time, etc. But going back to the loan thing, like the Harry Byrne loan deal was a set of circumstances that might never happen again, right? But I think, and even when I was...
Well, I get to, as far as I know, the IRFU and David Humphreys are open to those kind of things, but way more than they would have previously been.
And that's brilliant, but I actually think it needs to go to another level. So when I was in the Dragons, they identified players with that they believed had elite potential, right? And they would sit down, the people who work for WRU involved in those elite players' development, you sit down with the four head coaches of the regions and try and work out what the best possible development plan for them was in terms of whether it's playing for their club side in the Welsh Premiership, whether it's playing for the Dragons in my case, or whether it was going playing sevens. So like Rio Dyer and Tame Basham, it was felt that sevens was a stepping stone to them to get them into the Dragons team and to Wales, and obviously that worked there. Ireland, the sevens is gone now, so that's not an option. But I actually think someone in the IRFU should be in charge of this, mm-hmm. in charge of this, and because no provincial coach is going to actively want to let a player go because it only takes two injuries.
You might need him, right?
So there, and we've seen this over the last 10 years that there's been so few loan deals, mm-hmm. and don't tell me that clubs haven't been interested in a player in Leinster, Munster, Ulster, Connacht, whether it's a top 14, Pro D2, or Gallagher Premiership club. But obviously the answer is no, right? But I actually think if David Humphreys is open to it, that's brilliant. But I actually think maybe even be more proactive. So by the time December, January comes around, when everybody's had a chance to play, and when the coaches kind of have their first choice team, if there's a window there to send a young player to Pro D2 in France as a medical joker, or to the Gallagher Premiership, or ideally top 14, where there's likelihood they're going to get game time for 3 or 4 months, and they're still coming back to that province, I think that's a win-win. Obviously, short term it damages the province, but only in an area where there's a bit of depth, and maybe even have a guaranteed callback option that you can call them back. I'd love to see that. That would be for me a creative way of further developing their talent pool.
Yeah, we've seen kind of slight examples of it. I know a couple of Munster players in the last few years have gone out to Australia in the off-season, but generally speaking, they've been players who are way out on the fringes of Munster, and it's players coming back from an injury. And I never really got the impression they were going down to get some game time ahead of coming back to Munster and really challenging for first-team place. It felt like an opportunity for them to go out and make some contacts for their next move.
Sure.
But like you look at so many French players over the years, these players at the age of 21, 22 will start popping up in a Toulouse team or a Racing team or wherever, and you look into them and you realise they've got 50 Pro D2 games under their belt since they were 19 years old because they went out on a loan spell down there, and by the time they're 21, 22, they're game ready for Test rugby.
But that didn't happen by chance. So I was there when that started to happen. That happened because they changed the rules around foreign players, and your TV money was based on the percentage of GIF players who come through French academy that you have in your squad. So suddenly they were looking at these youngsters and they're going, well, in 2 years' time, they're going to have to replace an All Black or a Springbok or a Fijian or Tongan because that's the way it's going. So how can we get them ready? Yeah, send them on loan to Pro D2, you know, and where they can play. And also then they're very good at hoovering up the best talent in Pro D2 as well. So there's an incentive for Pro D2 clubs to develop young players because they get paid a fee for them based on how many games they've played for the Pro D2 side. So it's interesting. Just before we move on to Ireland, I just thought Jake O'Riordan made his debut for Munster the weekend, and I thought he gave a lovely tribute to the late Tom Tierney after the game, because Tom Tierney had coached him in the academy, and obviously being a nine had done a lot of work with him, and I just thought it was a lovely tribute for Tom and his family to see some of the players that he put a lot of time into starting to come true and live their dream of playing for the province.
Yeah, proud day for Brough Rugby Club as well. Mm. I know he's from out that part of the world as well. Actually, on that note, just coming back to Munster, Roman Salanoa. I was down in Lakelands on Saturday afternoon watching Terry Neuer and Nina Ormond. Salanoa started for Nina. Looked in very, very good shape. I was quite impressed and got on the ball a lot. Won a couple of scrum penalties. So Might feature this weekend for Munster. You never know against the Pumas. So something to look forward to maybe a little bit later on.
He'd been very impressive for them in the A game against Leinster when he came off the bench as well. Had a big impact. So I was speaking to a Munster player, and I was speaking to Alex Codling before the game, and he just said he has something different.
Yeah.
You know, he has something different. And they're hoping that he just gets a bit of a look and a bit of a run, and we get to see that on a regular basis.
Yeah, 2 years out of the game, and you could easily forget he was on the fringes of an Ireland call-up by the time he had an Ireland call-up by the time he got those injuries. Let's move it on to Ireland, though. Ireland-New Zealand, Saturday night, 10 past 8 Irish time is the kickoff in Chicago and Soldier Field. You're heading over early flight tomorrow morning. Busy week ahead.
Preparation is key, Neil. If you don't, you have to get over there early just to make sure you're fit. Yeah, I'm going over. I'm actually lucky enough. I'm working with Justin Marshall for Sky Sports New Zealand on COCOM. They're doing their studio from Auckland. But yeah, I can't wait. I wasn't there in 2016, but I haven't met a person who didn't say it was phenomenal. I don't think it's going to get to that level because the first time is always special. But yeah, there's something unique about going to see Ireland play a game in a neutral venue like this against the All Blacks, I think.
Out of curiosity, Gareth, were you watching that match live at the time back in 2016 when Ireland got that first win? Do you remember where you were when you saw the result?
Unfortunately, no, I wasn't watching it live. I think we were on the way back on a bus from a trip with Exeter Chiefs at the time. So there was only about three lads who were Irish at the time, so not too many would have actually been watching it. So, you know, I obviously caught up on it. What a phenomenal day that was. Like, to be the first time for it ever to happen. Obviously, it'd be lovely if it happened in Dublin for the first time, but what an occasion, and what a performance those boys put in. And look, it's going to have to be as big a performance again, I'd say, to, you know, New Zealand. Obviously, the way they're coming off the back of their rugby championship, you know, they're a bit stronger than they've probably had a bit of a dip a little bit as well, but they're a little bit stronger maybe now, and they'll be a little bit confident, and they surely will want to rectify that result from 9 years ago.
Yeah, it's tough to get a read on New Zealand at the moment, Bert, I think, because when they've been good, like they finished second in the rugby championship, they could have won the thing overall. They had four wins and two defeats, just finished a point behind South Africa in the end. When they were good in the rugby championship, they were very, very good. When they were bad, they were pretty brutal, though. You think of that hockeying they took at home in Wellington against the Springboks, lost a game to Argentina as well. Couple of injuries, Tupuvia and Tyrell Lomax both out, Patrick Tuipulotu as well, so they're down a couple of locks. I find it really, really tough to get a read on where they're at. Obviously, as well, you have that situation where they're coming towards the end of their season. They are you might want to say finely tuned. If they put in a poor performance at the weekend and they lose, everyone's going to say, "Oh, they're tired at the end of a long season." Yeah. Whereas Ireland are coming in, I'd say, largely undercooked is the general estimation. It's very, very tough to get a read on this.
Yeah, game. It's bizarre to have, I suppose, the Northern Hemisphere team so undercooked, but it's only really Ireland. You look at England, you know, like the Lions players. I watched Northampton. Saracens the other night, and they're firing, you know. Yeah. they're ready to go, because obviously to come back a little bit earlier, it is unusual. I think I wouldn't say there's not a lot of talent in New Zealand rugby still, because watching the NPC, there's phenomenal talent coming through, but what they don't seem to have is as many kind of iconic leaders, legends, who make sure that they're more consistent. So, like, they have played some brilliant rugby in the Rugby Championship, but it is the reason, I suppose, that Wellington collapse and they lost to Argentina stays in your mind more, is because good All Blacks teams haven't tended to do that.
Yeah.
They tend to be just...
They're always in the fight.
Always in the fight, and incredibly consistent. Whereas the Box, who obviously have two World Cups, they've had some big blowouts over the last 8 years. But then you never doubt their ability to get back on track. So they're kind of very different in terms of the way they tend to operate. So when they do have blowouts like Argentina and the Springboks in Wellington, it makes you wonder, is everything okay there, you know? And having two locks out, like the last game, people forget this, but one of the reasons we won in Chicago was they had no line out. They did a couple of injuries before the game. Mm. I think the injury early in the game. And
Scott Barrett's debut, if I remember.
That's right, yeah. Scott Barrett played, but they just, like, it was like they met in the car park at line of time, and we had, like, a huge amount of their ball as well as our own ball was very solid, with Devon Toner dominating. So it's not as bad as we get, but it certainly miss Tupelotu or Vi's punch. Like Richie Mwanga is like, he's coming back for the next World Cup, and he's coming back, and they want him back for a reason, because they feel they haven't found an obvious list of players to replace him, and that's understandable. He's top class, but Jason Holland is stepping away, and that's in the back of Liam McDonald stepping away as well, and that could be a good thing. But it just makes you wonder, is everything as it should be in the All Blacks management, and then it's down to the players. And also, you know, Scott Robertson, probably the NZRU wanted to bring Scott Robertson in after Ireland beat them in New Zealand on the year before the World Cup, but the senior players backed Foster, and they worked with a lot of those were Canterbury Crusaders who were working with Robertson. So it's just a few little things that makes you wonder, is he as suited to international rugby as he was to Super Rugby? But yeah, we'll have to be on the money. It's for Farrell's point of view, like that underperformance by so many Irish players against Munster is probably perfect in terms of him being able to apply pressure to them. Apparently they had a training game on Saturday for in Chicago, which was high intensity, which is trying to simulate another match, because obviously they look a bit match shy. There is pressure on these players now to step up, because if we have a very bad November, he may have to then be a little bit more radical in the Six Nations to get game time into players for the World Cup. So that's the challenge.
And that's the part of it as well. Like, we can be guilty of over-egging the importance of a November campaign. And that gets highlighted when the World Cup failures arise. But the World Cup is 2 years away. If you look back on the previous World Cup block, November 2021, 2 years out from the World Cup, that was when the focus really started shifting towards the World Cup. And they had that brilliant trio of games against New Zealand, Japan, and who else was in 2021? Argentina as well. Blew the three of them away. And everything started to build from there. So if you're applying the same timeline, really, this is when we need to... I'm not saying Ireland need to win 4 out of 4and be outstanding for the whole month, but we need to start seeing that starting to come together. Throw in the fact that Andy Farrell hasn't had hands-on time with this team since for 11 months, since the end of November of last year. When you throw in the fact that there appears to be a little bit of a Lions hangover in there as well... and it's also probably the toughest slate of games that Ireland have or ever will have in November. All three of the Southern Hemisphere big hitters, Australia, New Zealand and South Africa, throw in Japan as well. This is a very, very tough month, but a huge month as well.
Yeah, it's massive. And like, Farrell is unbelievably loyal. But if you look at back over the past,
and it'll be interesting to see when how far that loyalty gets tested.
Well, no, in fairness to him, the players who he's backed have tended to play better for Ireland than they maybe were for the province at the time. So I've no doubt, and players will tell you, he can be ruthless when he wants to be. And the players will know that. So, but the challenge is this is a hard November, so maybe this wasn't a November to change things up. But the reality is, you're also running out of time. And I would also argue, like, what players have really, not this block of URC because it's so short, but over the last year, how many players have really proven that they deserve to be in ahead of some of the players that we're talking about, with maybe it's time for them to, that they maybe drop. So the likes of maybe James Lowe, etc., who, like, is there an obvious replacement to him? Stockdale, maybe. Mm-hmm. But in general, I don't think there's 10 lads out there playing URC who aren't involved with Ireland.
Well, I would say, I think a lot of people would say Gavin Coombs is someone who's done it week on week on week and
hasn't got a chance.
Aside from getting a sniff in Georgia over the summer. That's the glaring one.
Gavin Coombs' consistency means, I think, he's very unlucky. But at his best, at test level, is he better than Jack Cohen and Caelan Doris, Josh van der Fleer?
Well, we haven't had an opportunity.
No,
to
I know that. I know that. But that's the challenge. So the big challenge for him is to bring that to, when he plays big games in Europe. That's the challenge for him. I'd love to see it, because he has been unbelievably consistent. He has listened, but I actually don't think that's a position that necessarily we obviously need someone to replace him.
Stina, do you think this Ireland team is too difficult to break into?
Look. It's a very experienced unit. I know that Peter O'Mahony, Conor Murray, and obviously Cian Healy are gone now, but like it's been pretty established for quite a long period of time. Obviously, a lot of them are coming from Leinster as well, so it does kind of bode that the style of rugby that they're looking to play. It's like anything, you get a team together, it gets used to winning, it gets used to playing together. It's obviously we're disappointed to finish third in the Six Nations last year, but again, it's a unit that's well, and Andy's worked with these guys for a long period of time as well. Obviously, with him being away for the last 11 months, it actually, like I would say he's been away, he's experienced a few other things. He's been around different players from different nations. I'm no doubt he's picked up things as well. So it'll be really interesting to see how everyone pitches up. I think this game against New Zealand's fantastic, because you've just talked all the things around New Zealand as well, a little bit of in round the management, obviously, now with the Lions, you know, that little bit of potential hangover that you would have seen in that last game when Leinster played. So how the two teams are actually going to come out on Saturday night is going to be really interesting. Is it difficult to break into the Irish team? I think if you take Gavin as an example, you know, consistency is all he can do. If he's performing to the top level or that he can perform, that's all he can do, is keep knocking on the doors. When the European games come around, it's really important that he goes out, puts in performances there. And that's how you get, I feel that you'll kind of break into these squads, and probably need a little bit of luck along the way as well. So look, at the minute, if you look at Ireland's back row, it's probably one of the strongest, and you throw Caelan Doris coming back in there as well. So, like, they've experience right across the board. And, yes, it's a difficult position. It's great for Irish rugby that we have that. But, again, it's like anything. Whenever you get a team that's settled and the way they're looking to play, and we're playing the style that Andy wants the team to play as well, obviously it is kind of hard to break into, but not impossible, I would say.
Coombs might have thought he caught a break a few months ago when Caelan Doris picked up that shoulder injury, which looked like it would keep him out for a long time. But aside from those summer games, which Doris was never really going to be playing in anyway, it looks like he's not going to miss a significant test. Do you put him straight into the starting team this weekend, or is he a bench option?
I think because of his injury, I'd start him and let him just go hell for leather. And also
give him a week off against Japan.
Exactly,
maybe
a week off against Japan. And then be ready for the next two. The word is that he's going to start, which should be some test for him. First game of the season against the All Blacks, who are match hardened. But he's such a key player for Ireland. Obviously, Farrell sees him as captain as well. But yeah, I think he's going to start the game rather than come off the bench.
It's
a little bit like Aoife Wafer for us at the at the World Cup.
Yeah.
she obviously was such a big part of what we were trying to do. But it goes back to what Birch is saying there. Like, you know, you don't really want him to be on the bench and potentially be on after 2 minutes. Potentially you're better off starting him and then let him go. And if he blows up after 50 or 60, then, you can take him off the field. But like, I think just to have him back in there as well for his leadership quality would be really important for the lads as well.
Couple of quick selection bits before we finish up. Out half, obviously, Jack Crowley is the clear form man over the first five games of this season, probably from the tail end of last season as well. Barrell doesn't always pick on form, though. I think it's something we do have to remember this week. I'm not saying Sam Prendergast will start or that he should. I think it's something worth noting.
I think in this scenario, the best thing for Sam would be take him out of firing line, to be honest, yeah. And reward Jack for his recent form.
Because doing that ultimately, that actually generates the real competition.
Yeah.
Realistically, my own opinion would be like, if you were to start Sam Prendergast this week, you can keep talking about how these two are in competition with each other and how it's great for both of them. Ultimately, though, they aren't really in competition. I think Sam Prendergast is the number one over these games. I think if you reward the form player this week and next week and whoever, I think that's the way to really, really drive the idea that there is genuine competition there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. What do you think, Stino?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it sends a good message out as well that if you're playing well, you get an opportunity to play. So I definitely think where it's going at the minute, it's very hard not to pick Jack Crowley, really. So,
final thoughts? Any other positions need to go through? Tyke Byrne into the second row, you'd assume, with Joe McCarthy out, probably not an option in the back row. Who's starting number six, do you reckon? If we're thinking Caelan Doris starting at number eight, Jack Conan, Ryan Baird.
If Doris is...
Wildcard Tom Ahern.
Yeah, wildcard Tom Ahern. I think they may keep Conan back on the bench because of, obviously, the fact that Doris probably won't go 80. Mm-hmm. So I say it could be Baird. Baird's had some very, very good form and then obviously some mixed form, but...
Finished the season brilliantly.
Last season brilliantly. This season was a little bit up and down, but... has that athleticism that can make an impact at test level. But I'd love to see Tom Ahern get a run at six against one of the big three, whether it's this week or
get one game against the big three.
Really let him go and prove what he has.
And fullback then, Stino, Jamie Osborne, is that an open and shut case?
Yeah, I think so. I think the way he's performing, I think the way that it's going, he's obviously been performing very well, so giving him a go is good.
All right, we'll park it there. Quickly, prediction. How's it going to go?
I'd say I have to go with the All Blacks by five.
All Blacks by five. Stino?
Oh, I always like to stay positive, so I'd say we'll come across and we'll get... Birch will have a good time over in Chicago, so they'll win Ireland by six or seven.
Grant, I'll wait.
I want you to have a good time over there, Birch. Absolutely.
Thanks, man. I won't be like you on the bus journeys back from Exeter. No wonder you weren't watching the match, the Ireland game.
Those
bus journeys are famous.
There's no Wi-Fi on that bus, or, there's blackout windows as well.
Yeah, I reckon you'll enjoy your few days regardless of the result anyway, Birch. Enjoy the trip, enjoy the match. Dino, thanks a million for joining us as well. That's it from the RT Rugby podcast this week. We'll be back again this time next week, maybe Wednesday next week, but we'll speak to you again soon.